Turning a major Jacksonville highway into a walkers and bikers paradise. Can it be done? We'll find out just ahead. Good Tuesday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross. We're always live at 9 and now never miss a show. Subscribe to the Daily Podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Just ahead, we want your calls on a big vision for changing the Arlington Expressway. Get on the line whether you live in Arlington or anywhere in the region, 549-2937, to talk about transit in our area. Then later, royalty visits St. Augustine, a look back to the highlights from the big 450th party, plus author Mike Rose and the work of Daniel Kids, as that charity marks 130 years in this area. All of that ahead this morning. But first this hour, a major makeover could be in the works for the Arlington Expressway, first built back in the 50s. With a bold design inspired by the neighborhood's changing demands. Now, the North Florida TPO, that's the Transportation Planning Organization, has a vision to eventually turn the expressway into a pedestrian and bike-friendly urban boulevard. Currently, it's designed as a highway that takes you straight from downtown east without ever stopping anywhere in the Arlington community. It was designed for another era, and it's not a design that meets the neighborhood today. But in order to change it, the TPO needs funding, and a lot of it. Executive Director Jeff Sheffield is here now to tell us about the vision and the road ahead, both literally and figuratively. Hey, Jeff, good morning.
Good morning.
And here's our question to callers. The North Florida TPO wants to reform the Arlington Expressway, make it pedestrian and bike friendly. What are your thoughts about this vision? And what are your thoughts about Jacksonville as a community that isn't friendly at all to walkers and bikers? And what should we do about that? Get on the line now at 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet the show. And so this is a design, isn't it, Jeff, that was inspired by something you saw out of Boston, Mass. Is that right?
It is. It's kind of looking at a project that occurred there. Many may know it as the Big Dig. That took a freeway corridor, moved it below ground, and then returned that corridor to more of a pedestrian-friendly, large median opportunities, boulevard-type design that's already allowed for urban renewal and redevelopment up and down the corridor.
So you want to take the Arlington Expressway, which currently just has a couple of off points, University Boulevard and Cessory Boulevard, instead of those being like the only cross streets, you want to make it into a regular road with lots of cross streets and places to get on and off. That's just one of the changes, right?
Yeah, I think that's the idea. What we're looking at here, I mean, this is just a big idea at the moment. It's an opportunity to think differently on how we do some of these corridors. It is a little different from a transportation planning agency perspective because this isn't about congestion. This is looking at an opportunity to make the corridor more multimodal, bike, ped, transit, and better movement overall throughout the corridor. This would take the expressway design and turn it into a more traditional road.
You'd have a traditional road, you'd have bike paths, pedestrian paths. You'd have a space in the middle for light rail.
That's an opportunity. There's a couple ideas at this point, and again, high-level look at this moment. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about the kind of right-of-way that's out there with the expressway and the service roads on each side, it really gives us an opportunity to think big, looking at large medians, anywhere from 45 to even 90 feet in width to account for some of those transit ideas.
And what are your thoughts about this big vision for redoing the Arlington Expressway? What are your thoughts about Jacksonville as one of the least bike and pedestrian-friendly cities in America? What do you think we need to do about that? Give us a call at 549-2937. And it's no accident that you're looking at the Arlington Expressway for this vision, correct, Jeff? There's a particular reason for this.
It is. We've seen, too, there's just a decline. For anyone who's lived here for a long time, knows the history of Arlington. We're talking about a corridor here when it was built in the 50s is the first suburban expressway in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And so when it was built in 1953, over the seven-year period, we saw 50,000 people move to Arlington. And if you had lived here, you remembered retail being downtown Jacksonville. And most of that transitioned to the Regency area, and Arlington was booming. We've seen a decline now over the decades, and this is an opportunity to see if transportation corridors can assist in an urban renewal opportunity.
So for younger listeners, they need to picture, say, the St. John's Town Center today.
Yep.
And realize that that's what Arlington used to look like.
Absolutely. From downtown to Arlington, and now kind of moving to the town center. And it's really created a challenge for the area. And so this is, again, an opportunity to see if we can assist in recovery.
This is personal for you because, as I learned a moment ago this morning as you and I were chatting, you are a Jacksonville boy, born and bred, and you grew up in Arlington.
I did. My dad still lives over in the area, very familiar with it. And so there is a personal nature to it, having seen the full history of the Arlington area. So I know there's opportunity there, and I think that this is a way to look at it.
What are your memories as a boy of what it was like then?
Well, I tell you, it was the idea to what I just said. I remember driving downtown earlier as a young child to all of the retail, Sears and Woolworths and those sorts of things. And all that moved into the neighborhood where we lived in Regency. So the opportunities were there. JU booming, the Arlington area growing, retail up and down the Arlington Expressway. It was just a booming community.
So when you drove down the expressway, it was like the Vegas Strip without all the neon, right? It was it was just nothing but shops and restaurants
and
activity.
Shops and restaurants, town and country at University and Arlington Expressway booming, movie theaters, retail, restaurants, just everything that you see occurring now in other areas of town.
Has it been sad for you to watch the decline?
It is. It's difficult not just there. We see it in other areas in Northeast Florida. It's not uncommon to see this shift.
Yeah.
But it is difficult to see it happen.
It's a classic story in cities all over America, isn't it, Jeff? Arlington is the prototypical inner ring suburb that has seen this sort of falling off. And urban planners like you and transportation experts are trying to devise 21st century ways to bring communities like Arlington back.
That's right. And I think it does create a need to think differently. And when I say that, all transportation is not necessarily about relieving congestion, making it a faster trip through the community. And so now it's an opportunity to go back and say, you know, we maybe didn't do all this exactly the right way. It served what it needed to at the time, but now we need to rethink it. And it's now about moving vehicles. It's about moving people in any way you can. And it's about making the community more friendly to all modes.
To redo the Arlington Expressway, you're looking at between $40 to $50 million. Is that right?
Very ballpark at the moment. Again, like I said, that we're very high level. This was just looking at some concepts. So that's kind of a target number at this moment.
How does Main Street going through Springfield serve as a model, if at all, for what you're envisioning? Because that I think of as sort of an urban boulevard where they're trying to sort of prettify it up, make it walkable, connect it to the community, connect it to the residential and the businesses.
I think it's similar in nature when you're talking about trying to bring in the other components to it, but still a much more expansive project because of the amount of traffic you still need to move through there. We are talking about a corridor that's still bringing in the beaches communities and others coming into downtown. So what we need to do is make sure we balance that, because I will tell you, in looking at this concept, it does create a little bit more of a travel time through the area. So there is a balance.
So there would be some pushback, theoretically. People, not everyone would be on board.
Not necessarily everyone. That's right. But when we look at the history of the traffic right now, the volumes continue to go down. The traffic moving through that corridor is really traffic moving through it, not within it. Mm-hmm. And so there would be some potential pushback, but we're not talking about huge delay created from it.
And as we speak with Jeff Sheffield, who heads up the North Florida TPO, the Transportation Planning Organization, the lines are jammed as we talk about the future vision for the Arlington Expressway. I am not surprised, Jeff. People in this area care a lot about transportation and issues like this. Let's go to your calls right now. Jefferson in San Marco. Hi, Jefferson. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Go ahead.
Good morning. Can you hear me good?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, I used to live in Arlington, and I highly support any kind of rejuvenation, especially with Arlington Expressway. I used to take it into work every day. I did not know about a lot of the businesses there until I started to need them because I lived in that area. And it just seemed a little sad that you didn't know because you couldn't see them. You just go from the Regency area right downtown, and that was the journey. And it just seems like any kind of improvement. I mean, and $40 million does not seem like enough. I mean, would be great for that area. I think it would galvanize the neighborhoods. I think JU would profit from it in some way. I think economically, that area has been is on the decline, but I believe that area can become much improved from something like this and probably help the city out as well economically. I think before that whole area gets ignored, and businesses will suffer eventually, really good businesses, well-known businesses, not just the small guys. So anyway, that's just my take. I think San Marcos constantly being improved. Lots of other parts of town are being improved. People are looking at Springfield differently, and it is working. And Arlington is just, in my view, is kind of getting the raw deal. So
yeah, thanks, Jefferson. Jefferson in San Marco, thanks for the call. Jeff.
Yeah, he's correct, too. We're looking at over 65 vacant properties all up and down the corridor now.
Mm-hmm. And lots of for sale and for rent signs.
Lots of them. And the opportunities, the prospects are not good.
Melody in Arlington. Hi, Melody. A call from Arlington. Go ahead, Melody.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead.
Well, it's interesting. I was talking about this subject just yesterday with our new councilwoman, Joyce Morgan. I had been traveling down the Arlington Expressway, and there were a group of kids that were trying to cross the expressway. It looked like they were trying to go to school. They had backpacks and school uniforms on. And we were discussing about, how transportation needs to be not just about cars, but it needs to be about people, too. And what could we do? And we had a long discussion about the TPO. I don't know if people realize that there's something going on called Renew Arlington, which is part of the CRA that was really inspired by Tim Cost at JU, and it's looking at revitalizing a large chunk of Arlington. And they released that last Thursday night. I think there was an event at JU, and they're talking about possibly putting in a transportation hub there at Town and Country, which I think could alleviate some of this congestion that people are talking about and making it more people-friendly as well as car-friendly.
Melody calling from Arlington. Thanks for that. Let's talk about Renew Arlington, Jeff, and also the work of JU President Tim Cost. He's very much engaged in working to improve the neighborhood around the university.
Yes, he is, and the university corridor. And part, again, of doing this is sort of you look at opportunity. And so when there's an opportunity for us to maybe consider this big idea, it's built on synergy. And so we knew the president had been looking at an opportunity there in university, looking at creating a community redevelopment area. And so the timing was right to go ahead and explore something like this as well and try to have them feed off of each other.
And she mentioned the Town and Country Shopping Center, a transit hub maybe going in there. What do you think about that?
Well, we'd have to look at it. It's certainly a concept worth considering. Again, transit is a key component to this. And if and when one day the Matthews Bridge were to be replaced, there's a transit component to that. So we want to make sure that we're thinking for all those opportunities.
Calls from all over the area. Tiffany on the west side. Hi, Tiffany. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Great. Thank you.
Yes, I really think that will be an awesome idea to make the Arlington Expressway more friendlier. I was just over there yesterday, and just looking at, from a parental standpoint, the number of children and teens that either have to cross, like the caller said before, to get either to the bus stop. I think one thing that will also have to be considered as the children are going back and forth to school, and you have the elementary school, the middle, and the high school, is how accessible it will be for school buses, and how accessible will it be for children to get to those bus stops and walking across, and just making it family friendly and friendly, you know, for those children to commute if they're going to walk or use their bike to go back and forth.
Tiffany, thank you. Yeah. Jeff, what about that question?
I do. I think one of the things that I want to make sure we kind of understand here with the big idea, I think people may still visualize the expressway as it is. The idea here is to remove what you see today. It's not the barrier in the middle, the fence, the wall where we know pedestrians to climb and only 3 points to access across.
Yeah.
We're literally, the concept here is to take at University, at Arlington Road and Cessory, the underpasses, fill them in and bring this all at level and create a true corridor. So we're talking about now the ability for roadways all up and down to interconnect and create that more access.
And lots of sidewalks, bike paths, so that, as she said, families walking,
right,
kids getting on buses, it would be a lot less difficult.
A lot less difficult.
Let's go to Theo now in Atlantic Beach. Hi, Theo. What are your thoughts?
Well, I think the road to perdition is paved with good intentions. And I think that from what I'm hearing thus far, I can foresee making a good faith effort to resolve one problem and creating a number of others. One of the problems that I see, unless you're able to go underground and maintain the high degree of traffic flow that goes on that road, that it's going to create a huge problem that's going to have people in an uproar. Like it or not, we have a need to move cars from the beach to town back and forth. One of the greatest things that happened on that, and by the way, I'm an Arlington brat myself, one of the greatest things that happened was the removal of the toll bridges on Matthews Bridge, because slowing down just for a few seconds to toss 15 cents into a basket and proceed to work created gigantuan bottlenecks that backed up the Arlington Expressway all the way to Regency Square every single day and in the opposite direction every night. And if we do something that, as you already stated, slows the flow a little bit, just tossing 15 cents, and the cage didn't slow it down much, but it was enough to create horrible pollution and bottlenecks. And I just, unless you're able to go totally underground and maintain the traffic flow, I hear this is, nothing I've heard thus far is going to do anything but create a revolt, quite frankly.
Yeah, thank you, Theo. Theo at the beaches. And here's a tweet asking the same thing for you, Jeff. A listener tweets the show, what about the people who use the expressway to go east of Arlington out to Queens Harbor, out to the beaches? Will this add to their commute?
It does. I mean, we're not suggesting that this doesn't create some challenges. But it is trying to look at the overall improvement. But I will tell you, I lived the toll as well. I will also tell you, though, the traffic volumes up and down the Arlington Expressway were significantly higher during that era. What we are seeing are a steady decline. So right now, the corridor and its capacity levels, based on transportation standards.
Daily car load, daily vehicle load is a lot less.
The volumes are down, and the corridor itself by design is designed to carry far more than what it does at the moment.
Why is that?
It's just, again, the community and in the way it's continued to decline. The diversity of development in the region, everything is not flowing downtown anymore.
People are moving to other parts.
They're moving, they're working in other areas. The days of everyone traveling San Jose, Roosevelt, Arlington Expressway, Atlantic, all to work in downtown and go home are not there now. We're working all over the region.
Richard is calling from downtown. Richard, good morning.
Yes. Hey, good morning. How are y'all?
All right.
Just want to give another side of that. I think this is a horrible idea. And what everybody's ignoring is the elephant in the room, why Arlington is declining. And it's because of crime, and it's because people are not feeling safe. That includes Regency Square, that includes the theaters, and that's why Arlington is declining. It has absolutely nothing to do with that corridor. And if anybody knows anything about Jacksonville and has tried to go down Atlantic Boulevard or on the Arlington Expressway past Regency at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, the lines are unbelievable. And to think that they're going to slow that down, I think you're ignoring the elephant in the room, and you need to take care of that first before you think about anything else.
All right, Richard. Thanks, Richard. Okay, let's talk about that. Crime and the perception of public safety in the community. Jeff Sheffield, how does that tie into your vision?
Tie-in, I wouldn't say it's directly related to what we've looked at, but to my point earlier, this is not the single solution to bringing back Arlington. It's just a component within the realm of what we look at from transportation. It's undeniable, the crime statistics. There are a number of strategies that need to be in play to bring back Arlington. Today is just to talk about a transportation piece that we have seen in other areas of the country contribute.
You think revamping transportation is one piece of the puzzle toward revitalizing the community, which would in turn bring down the crime rate?
I don't know for sure that I could suggest the crime rate goes down because of it, but one would suggest certainly that when there's more activity and more movement within the area, you could see that sort of thing occurring. And right now, we again are seeing just the consistent decline of the area. Crime is a key component. I don't think it's ignoring it. It just doesn't fit, frankly, in the context of today.
Mike is in Arlington. Hey, Mike, thanks for holding. Mike, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I love this show.
Thanks.
I love the fact that we discuss so many relevant issues. I'm an Arlington resident. I've been in Jacksonville for about over 30 years now, and Arlington has I lived in Arlington now for almost 15 years, and I got to tell you, the previous caller made some seriously good points. I would love to see a lot of things change, but the expressway is one of those things that unless you've got I don't think unless you get a momentum of people who are wanting to come to the area and invest in the area, you're going to see a lot of movement on that needle. I mean, this goes back to the 90s when you had a lot of subsidized housing dropped into the area, which it's helped to increase the crime rate in this area, and it's really made for a lot of flight from the area. You don't have any good places to eat in West Arlington. I mean, there are just none. They don't exist. You maybe have a handful of restaurants, and most of them are not draws. They're not things that draw people into the area. You don't have a lot of shops or a lot of things in the area that make people want to come here. And while I applaud his efforts, I mean, there's, you know, listen, anybody with big ideas, I love big ideas, but it feels like a little bit of a cart before the horse. If you want $40 million worth of funding for something like this, you really need to have a bigger financial underpinning. If Springfield is moving because people are moving there, I mean, people are going there, they're starting businesses, there are places to go, places to eat there. You don't have that draw in Arlington, and I don't see.
Yeah, and I hear you, Mike.
Creating that, it's got the other one's got to drive.
So
the
where
other,
do you? So. Yeah. So where do anyway. You begin? Where do you begin? Where do you begin to turn
That's
a neighborhood
a good
around?
Point.
Where does it start? You know,
that's a good point. I don't know. I think that something like changes to the expressway, especially something that's going to impact traffic, is one of those things that's going to be a response to some stuff already happening in Arlington. I'm not sure what needs to happen. I know that we need to have, if you talk to anybody in the city council, if you talk to people who are concerned and care about the area, they'll all say, we need more businesses, we need more restaurants, we need more places for people to go. Everybody always agrees with that. But you've still got a lot of for rent signs. You've got a lot of property that's sitting there vacant. You got a lot of things that aren't open during the day.
Thanks,
that's
Mike.
Another factor.
Yeah.
You know,
thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mike. That's Mike in Arlington. Jeff.
You know, all the points are valid. And I think that's really what, frankly, again, this is trying to do, is to spur conversation. First of all, and let me say, the cart is not before the horse here. In the world of transportation, this is not a project that's happening tomorrow. This really is a conceptual idea to encourage conversation. So when we talk 40 million, with all due respect, it's not on the radar right now in terms of our funding strategies to make this project happen. So today's not an ask for $40 million, but it is an ask to think differently and to express opinions like today on whether this is even from a transportation side, a concept that could contribute to solution.
Just judging by the incredible volume of calls, there is a lot of interest. Mm-hmm. But I think the last caller, Mike, as he pointed out, there's so much frustration. People don't even know where to begin. There's not even agreement on how to get everyone rowing in the same direction to figure out where to start to revitalize this community.
It's not. There's so many different areas that need to be addressed. And so to the extent that we look at something and that JU and the president is looking at other opportunities, that's back to the synergy thing. The conversation is occurring, so let's have this conversation and mm-hmm. decide what needs to be done.
Let's have a couple more callers. Anthony in Orange Park. Hey, Anthony, are you still with us? All right, Anthony, sorry. Jason at UNF. Jason, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Melissa. Good morning. And you're totally hitting on the right thing. We need to get the conversation started. And there's a lot of inspirational things going on around the country that we can look to as models that we can employ here. I think the High Line in Manhattan is one. It's sort of this discussion is reminiscent of that, where they took a dilapidated old elevated train and turned it into one of the most beautiful, quiet, and serene places in one of the busiest cities in the world. I also think one of the things that will really help the entire city, I cannot be more serious about this, is the interconnectivity in Jacksonville is very poor. I believe they need to make it absolutely, utterly free to get on a bus and go anywhere in the city. And I think they need to expand the Skyway. The Skyway is a complete and utter disaster. It doesn't connect San Marco, Springfield, Arlington, or Riverside Avondale to downtown. Yeah. And if you want to see our downtown absolutely explode, you will connect the Skyway to those historic neighborhoods that ring downtown, and you will make it free.
Thanks,
when
Jason.
When you make it free, you will spur economic growth like you cannot even begin to imagine. And if you want to see a perfect model of that, go to downtown Portland, where they have a wonderful zone where getting on and off their trolleys is 100% free, and it is a beehive of activity down there. And once again, you have started the ball rolling, and that's what has to happen, is to get the conversation started. So I really appreciate this topic.
Sure, Jason. Thanks. You know, we did reach out to JTA to come on the show with you today, Jeff, and talk about what's to be done with the Skyway. They indicated they're just not ready to have that conversation yet, but that is part of this discussion. We want to do that on another day.
It is, and I will say to JTA, they are in the middle of an evaluation now with opportunities. And really, their next step is not unlike what we're doing today. Their next step now is a committee and task force to go into the community and engage a community conversation on the Skyway.
Lots of tweets. Brian on Twitter, bikers need a safe way to get from Riverside and downtown to the beaches. Here's a tweet from Shameless. I think this is outstanding. How can we start? Here's a long email from Mike at the beaches. We just moved here from Denver, which has great mass transit, and they just voted in big money for a light rail system, which works well. Living at the beaches, it's apparent how bad mass transit is and how much demand there is for bike paths. And, you know, he says we need to look to other cities like Denver for moving ahead as a community in improving our poor transit services generally. We hear this all the time when we do this type of topic, Jeff. People who've moved here from another city always say, well, where I used to live, it was so much better, and there's no vision here to do it the way it was done in this other city where it's so much better. And I know you hear this all the time, too.
We do, and all areas are not created equal. We all have our challenges, but I do think every one of those comments are valid because we are always looking at other areas to see what type of concepts might work here. But it isn't one size fits all. So we're looking at it. When you look at the transit piece, to that gentleman's point, the JTA is evaluating light rail. Bus rapid transit system is about to get underway. So these types of things, they're evaluating the potential of the Skyway, and they're going to look to the community for input on how that should be addressed. So transit is being considered. We've seen the energy behind Bike Ped. It's funny, I've been doing this for 23 years, and frankly, Bike Ped is sort of cyclical. And we're in a high again right now where there's a community interest in it. And so we want to take advantage of that and be able to leverage funding and see how we can make strong investments in the Bike Ped and transit areas. Why the interest, again, is frankly there.
Always fascinating to speak with you. Keep us posted on this. Lots of interest. Thanks
sure.
again.
Thank you.
Jeff Sheffield, Executive Director of the North Florida TPO, joining us. And later, a closer look at the oldest charity in town, Daniel Kids, marking 130 years in the area. But up next, a look back at St. Augustine's 450th, capped off by a visit from royalty.
Join WJCT for a dinner honoring this year's American Graduate Champions of the First Coast, Wednesday, September 30th, 6 p.m. at the WJCT Studios. Special guest speaker, Liz Sembler, Chair of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Learn how you can become an American Graduate Champion by connecting with organizations in our own community. Tickets are available at WJCT.org.
WJCT and Community First Credit Union are dedicated to improving our community by empowering one of our most valuable resources, our teachers. Here's what some local teachers had to say about our fourth annual Teach Conference.
It's been wonderful. I love the keynote speakers. Both of them were incredible.
I think I've only missed 1 year since they've had it. And every year I always use, you know, learn something that I can take back to the teachers at my school to utilize in their programs to make our program better.
It just really kind of gives us some energy to go back into the battlefield and do what we need to do for these kids.
Every one of us are going to leave here with something positive and useful for our classrooms.
Major funding for the Teach Conference is made possible by CSX Transportation, the Florida Lottery, and the Jacksonville Public Education Fund. To learn more about how WJCT assists parents, caregivers, and educators to help kids succeed, visit wjct.org/education.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
Welcome back. Well, a visit from the King and Queen of Spain was quite the capper to weeks of celebrations in the nation's oldest city, a fitting way to close out St. Augustine's 450th celebration. Today, in our final installment of our America's First City series, we're taking a look back as we welcome two men who helmed all of the festivities, Dana St. Clair, director of the 450th commemoration, and Lauren Luders, Celebrate 450 director and City of St. Augustine Chief of Police. Gentlemen, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
And kudos on a very successful series of events. Dana, let's begin with you. The King and Queen of Spain, King Felipe and Queen Letizia, came to much fanfare the other day. That had to have been so exciting.
We were excited about that, and they were as well, too. The King and Queen had heard so much about our commemoration, our celebration. In fact, had announced to the Spanish media how excited they were to visit St. Augustine and celebrate the Spanish founding of America after they visited the White House. So they went from Barack and Michelle's house to our house. We were very happy about that.
Was it their first visit to St. Augustine?
It was as King and Queen.
They'd been before, but not...
Yes, as a child.
Wow. And so let's talk to the police chief, Lauren Luders. I imagine the security challenges were considerable for this visit.
They were. We obviously have partners in helping with the security and the way I like to describe it. It was kind of like an onion. There was different layers. So he had his personal security right at his side, and then the Secret Service took care of the next layer, and then us and the local agencies took care of it from there. So it was coordination, and it worked out great. It went really smooth.
So looking back on not only the visit from royalty, but there were a number of major logistical challenges that you guys had to pull off. I'm sure lots of long days, some stressful moments. As you look back on this big milestone, what were some lessons learned? What are some highlights for you?
I guess lessons learned is we can put 60,000 people in downtown St. Augustine and handle a concert. So, there were some very trying times, and it was just all a matter of coordination. And the different agencies that got put together for my particular part of it, the Celebrate 450, which was just the weekend activities. We couldn't have done it without the county's help, the amphitheater and the sheriff's office and the beach. And it just, everything went remarkably well.
Yeah, incredible team effort, Dana.
Always, yes. We've had that from the very beginning. Lauren has been a principal role in that from the very beginning. We laid this thing out as a 4-year linear event. I think our total programs now are up around 80 since 2012. And Lauren has been a part of that, and the police department have been part of that all the way through, from the big things to the little things, from Mumford and Sons to the arrival of the El Galleon to our Spanish Wine Festival to, the dedication of the baptismal font in the cathedral. There are just a number of different things that we've done over the 4 years that attract different segments of audience, different types of people.
Yeah, this has been going on for years.
That's what I was going to say. It's funny, in a lot of the talks, because I did many of them as we were getting close to the actual birthday weekend, a lot of people forget that for 5 years, Dana's had programs going on and on and on and on, and then right at the end, I got to come in and throw a big party. So it's kind of like, all of a sudden, everybody's like, wow, what happened here? But no, and there were just so many different events and activities, and we had, the Journey and the Picasso, and just people forget. It's because it didn't happen yesterday. It was 3 or 4 years ago, and his division just did an outstanding job with all that and coordinating it and putting it together. And for something that, cities don't normally ever do, there was a special division that was created. And, as you can well imagine, when you come into a government entity and you're doing something totally outside of our comfort zone, and, Dana really had to go through some trying times, and his division did, and they did outstanding. This a tribute to all of them. They were just hard workers.
It is a huge effort and accomplishment when you consider this is a small city that's pulled off, it must be said, a global event. This did attract global interest and was quite a cultural milestone. And now you've got 50 years to plan the next one, right?
That's pretty good. And you're right, Melissa, it was global. Our last, the Royals visited, but the last event that we did this weekend was the U.S.-Spain Council International Summit. We had 300 world leaders in for 3 days, and Little St. Augustine, a town of 13,000 people. And that's a really big deal. And it sort of validates the royal visit, the U.S. Spain Council sort of validates our important role in world history.
There were protests. Indigenous peoples protested the 450th. In terms of handling the negative aspects of it, how do you feel about that aspect, Chief?
I think it went really well. Obviously they have the right to come out and protest and whatever, as long as it doesn't interfere with the actual event. And we gave them plenty of space in order to do their protest, and it worked out well. I think we actually had 2 arrests and that wasn't until the actual Founders Day celebration that we had any arrest, period. Yeah.
So now that it's all over with, a well-deserved vacation, I guess, or no?
We're all planning on doing that. I'm going to go sit on a mountaintop for a couple of weeks, and everybody else has a little downtime and excursion before we jump back into the private sector.
Sure. And, it's interesting to look back to 1965 when St. Augustine celebrated its 400th. The height of the civil rights protests were happening then. The 450th is going on at an interesting time in history. for our kids, when St. Augustine celebrates its 500th, who knows what will be happening, but it'll be an interesting time, I'm sure, as well.
Always.
Yeah.
Well, and you know, you mentioned something very important. The reason the 400th didn't work is because the city planners did not allow African-American representation in planning the 400th commemoration. It's why Lyndon B. Johnson shut down the federal commission.
Yeah.
This year, one of our biggest elements was in 2014, celebrating the 50th anniversary of the Civil Rights Act, the catalyst of which took place in St. Augustine at the Mount Monson Pool. We did that with a full 14-member African-American Advisory Council. The entire journey concept was a celebration of African-American history and the beginning of the African-American experience.
It's fascinating to speak with both of you, and it's been quite a journey, as I mentioned, as you mentioned, over a period of years, which we've been following on this program. So we're delighted to close it out with you both gentlemen today. Thanks for driving up from St. John's County to be with us. Thank you so much, and kudos.
Yeah, thanks for having
us.
All your support.
Thank you so much. He's Dana St. Clair, director of the 450th commemoration. Lauren Luters is chief of police in St. Augustine, the director of Celebrate 450. The celebrations have concluded. This is our final installment of America's First City here on the show, and we're back in a moment.
America's First City is sponsored by the St. Augustine 450th Commemoration and Tapestry Exhibition. Relax Radio is the great American songbook, oldies and light jazz.
The thing that's cool for me is that it feels like it's the music of my life.
Relax Radio is the station you can listen to all day on your HD radio. Make a $120 gift to WJCT and you'll receive an HD radio so you can tune in to Relax. Call 904-353-9528 for more information.
The survival rate for women with breast cancer is higher than it's ever been. On the next Fresh Air, we talk about recent improvements in diagnosis and treatment and the difficulty of navigating through confusing options with Dr. Elisa Port, Chief of Breast Surgery at Mount Sinai Medical Center and author of The New Generation Breast Cancer Book. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, community-supported public radio.
Hello, I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information. And stay informed at jacksready.com. And tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
Five years ago, Mark Zuckerberg pledged $100 million to fix the schools in Newark, New Jersey.
I mean, the message from the beginning was, you people have failed. You don't know how to fix your own schools. We're going to do it for you, and we're going to save your children.
I'm Kai Rizdal. He and others tried, didn't quite get there. We'll tell you more next time on Marketplace from 8 p.m. Weeknights at 6 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Well, next month, our First Coast Connect Book Club will discuss writer David McCullough's latest biography, exploring the life of the Wright brothers, and we want to hear your thoughts about it. You can check out copies of the book at the Jacksonville Public Library. They're a partner of our book club. You can buy the book at Chamberlain's or the Book Mine, and then let us know what you think of David McCullough's The Wright Brothers. Send your emails to our book club. It's just bookclub@wjct.org. Be part of our book club next month. Well, finally this hour, they are the oldest nonprofit in all of Jacksonville. Danielle Kids began as an orphanage in this area more than a century ago in this city, and today they are still serving local kids who've been abandoned, abused, or neglected. This week, Danielle Kids celebrates its 130th anniversary on the First Coast. Can you believe that? Chief Development Officer Warren Caterson is here now with a preview Good to see you. Good morning, Warren.
Glad to be here, Melissa.
130 years, established in 1884. That is just incredible.
It is. And what's even more incredible, Melissa, is how it started. A lot of people don't know this, but Daniel Kids was started by kids. There was a group of Sunday school kids here in Jacksonville back in 1884 that were concerned about how many homeless kids were living in Jacksonville. They wanted to do something about it. They wanted to start an orphanage. So the ladies of the church said, well, let's throw a carnival. Whatever you make, we'll match it. So the kids threw the carnival. The ladies of the church matched it. They came up with about $54. And with that, they started the orphanage for the homeless and friendless here in Jacksonville.
Wow. And it's just grown over the years to become one of the premier nonprofits in this area. Let's talk about how Daniel has gone from that to offering just an incredible range of services.
Yeah, we have quite well over a dozen services, Melissa. I'd like to just touch on five that I think your listeners would really be encouraged by. I think one of our chief ones is our residential program, which we call the State Inpatient Psychiatric Program. This brings in kids from all over the state that really suffer from severe emotional, psychological problems because of physical, sexual, emotional abuse. And it's a residential program where they can stay for 4 to 6 months and get intensive treatment, therapy. We have doctors on staff to help them get back on their feet, hopefully reunited with their family or their guardians. That's the best case scenario. But that is a model program that we have here in the state of Florida, and it's been mm-hmm. replicated in every district since we've started it.
How do kids get referred?
Most of them come, you know, through the state or government, whether they're courts or through mm-hmm. Family and Children's Services. But we also get referrals from teachers, guidance counselors, individuals, some families self-refer people.
And if you think you want to refer a child, people shouldn't be hesitant to do so if they think a child might need help.
Absolutely. Daniel is a one-stop shop. So calling Daniel, like I said, with our number of programs, we can probably help on some level or at least refer you to the agency that could really best benefit you.
And it's easy to find them at danielkids.com. In the meantime, an easy way to help Daniel and help children is to just go to this big party Friday night. This is the oldest anniversary party I think you'll ever go to anywhere in town because this is celebrating 130 years.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And we're not only oldest in we're the oldest child service agency in the state of Florida.
In the state, not just Jacksonville.
No,
in the state.
In the whole state, yeah.
Yeah.
So this is going to be a wonderful event. Melissa, we're going to have great music. We'll have great drink, gaming tables, dancing. We've got a wonderful strolling magician. Killer silent auction, and one of the best things we have is a chance to win eight days, 7 nights in your own private villa in Tuscany.
Oh, get out of here.
Including airfare. The tickets for that are $100, and we're only selling 100 of them. So the odds are
pretty good odds.
Really good. It's a reverse drawing, and that's all. For everything we raise that, from the ticket sales to the auction, the trip to Tuscany, is all that. All those proceeds, 100%, will go into Daniel programs.
Yeah,
so I just want to let people know that.
This goes right back to helping children. These are the most vulnerable children
absolutely.
In this community. These are children who are the victims of physical, emotional, sexual abuse. You work with the children that are in the darkest places.
Absolutely. And if you can't make the 130th, Melissa, I'm going to encourage our listeners. We're always looking for donors, for volunteers, board members, foster parents. Just call us up or look us up on danielkids.org.
Yeah, there's always a way to help, whether you can come out Friday or not. But come out Friday. This is Friday night at the Haskell Building.
7 o'clock.
7 o'clock. Just come on out to the party. It's they're right on Riverside Avenue. Daniel Kids celebrating 130 years on the First Coast. They began children, as Warren just explained, started this organization themselves in 1884. It's an incredible story. Warren, thanks so much for being with us, and thanks for sharing this amazing local story with our listeners.
Thank you, Melissa. Pleasure to be here.
Again, that is Daniel Kids 130th celebration, Friday night, 7 p.m. at the Haskell Building. Go to danielkids.org for tickets or to help in any way. That's our show. And thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchik. Never miss a show. Just subscribe to our daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. And next on Diane Rehm, Russia has significantly built up its military presence in war-torn Syria, a cause for growing concern by the U.S., Israel, and other nations. Russia's moves and what they could mean for the U.S., Syria's future, and the fight against ISIS. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.